Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report, sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Joining us today is my good friend, Jay Healy, senior research scholar at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs, who is also associated with the Atlantic Council think tank. He's a former Air Force officer. He's also a plank owner of the first Joint Cyber Command, JTF-CND, in 1999, and a former director of cyber infrastructure protection at the White House. He also created the first CERT at Goldman Sachs and was vice chair of the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Jay, thanks very much again for joining us. And I'm sorry that you're still in lockdown.
Great, great to be back. But yeah, I'm sure we have a lot of folks here that are in lockdown. So,
yeah, exactly. And fortunately, I hope everybody out there is also getting their flu shots to make sure that they don't end up in a perfect storm. So, speaking of perfect storm, you wrote a great piece that ran on Defense One on September the 10th, in which you argued that given the administration mobilized troops to crack down on protesters near Lafayette Park, and also considered deploying munitions, including heat rays and acoustic devices, that Cyber Command could have been mobilized as well. And sort of this notion of posse comitatus that was enacted in the wake of the Civil War by and signed by President Rutherford B. Hayes in 1878. I never thought in a podcast I'd ever actually mention President Hayes, but there you go. You know, it was a clear line, right? That was in response to troops that were on the streets. You know, there was the Insurrection Act as well, obviously, in this. And so people have a tougher time visualizing the role of cyber in all of this, and right, metadata collection, all of the agreements that we have with allies and partners that help us you know, being able to sift the bad guys from, you know, hundreds of millions of good guys. Right. Walk us through the nuance of your argument, and then let's maybe then get into the nuance, right? So macro fear, and then let's get into the nuance.
So this isn't really a posse comitatus issue, right? Those of us that have worked in defense, that's the first thing that we think of in many cases, the military acting domestically under law enforcement. But under Insurrection Act, that's not really what they're doing, right? Under Insurrection Act, like with the Civil War, we weren't doing that as a law enforcement action, as a policing action. It was the military to do what they do, Title 10 warfighting, and use lethal military force if necessary. I started my career in cyber, helping the Air Force think through its offensive requirements to deal with America's adversaries. A lot of my friends and colleagues have helped build those requirements. I'm sure many, many people that listen to your report frequently have been involved in building, developing those capabilities, thinking about how to use them, or actually even deploying them against Islamic State or others. What we didn't sign up for was to see those capabilities potentially used against protesters. And what we almost had this summer was the 82nd Airborne deployed to the streets of Washington, D.C. And so we do need to think a little bit more carefully about under what circumstances any president might be able to do such a thing. Now we have, to help us think about it, right? Let's think back to the Vietnam protest days when we know military intelligence and civilian intelligence used their capabilities to spy on protesters. And after, and this led to the Church Commission, the Pike Commission, and that led to quite a few protections so that into that intelligence collection couldn't happen. But now we have those capabilities, not just in places like NSA, where we have the Title 50, a lot of intelligence authorities that limit them, but also in Title 10 organizations, warfighting organizations like U.S. Cyber Command. And so the scenarios we walk through in the piece is under what circumstances you might have, you know, it's written for this president, might decide to use U.S. Cyber Command to target protesters, disrupt their servers, disrupt their communications, or even on the high end, say he was still the legitimate president after the election, and that the Democratic Party and the Biden transition team are insurrectionists, declare the Insurrection Act, and then use cyber warfighting capabilities to just try and disrupt.
So where, right? I mean, so the Obama administration, in the wake of the Snowden revelations, did wrap itself around several axles, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't clearly and as forcefully, I think, explain what metadata was, you know,
what our
allies and partners do on our behalf, the legality with the legal, as you said, legal constraints mm-hmm. that foreign intelligence operates with in the confines of the United States, right? I mean, some of our allies and partners do some of this intercept monitoring on our behalf to help us get around, but it's all by agreement. It's all by treaty. Yeah. It's all by understanding. How do we have this debate when, you know, and because that then just fueled the tinfoil hat crowd mm-hmm. and, you know, and it's such capability that we've never wanted to sort of fully discuss it in public, which then leads to further, you know, miscommunication, misunderstanding about what's happening and how. And now you even have commercial players, as you and I discussed earlier this year, that further complicate the situation, right? Sort of the cyber firm on hire. So how do we need to have this debate about to determine where these lines lie and how this capability can be used?
Yeah, I think
against the public.
I like to start that conversation based on the congressional authority rather than on the cyber capability, because the cyber capability is different today than it was a month ago, and it's going to be different than it is a month from now. So if we look at, you know, Congress started the Insurrection Act because of federalism, right? We don't have a central government where the president or the head of government can just use the military willy-nilly domestically, right? There were specific limits. Aaron came about in part, you know, Aaron Burr wanted to have a basically start an insurrection. He wanted to have his own military force. And there wasn't any congressional authorization for the president to use the military to stop that. And so they passed the Insurrection Act. That's what Lincoln used to fight the Civil War. And so under the Insurrection Act, right, it's up to the president. He declares that there is an insurrection and orders them to disperse. Once he does that, any president can use any means they see necessary, right? And any means seems pretty broad, right? And so once that's declared, you don't need the approval of the governor in the state that you're going to use these forces. So right, he would not need any president, he or she would need to check in with the governor. So that leads us to say, well, that seems a little, you know, maybe that was fine in previous times. But certainly we've been seeing, especially with this president, but also with earlier presidents, we saw this Obama and Bush, of using emergency declarations to be able to expand executive power. So there are a number of things, like Callie Magsum at the Center for American Progress had some great ideas, right, of saying you need an expedited judicial review, you need certification from the Attorney General and the Defense Secretary. We might also have a scope of authorities, an escalating set of authorities that say, well, you know what, the president can do this limited set of things until they come back and check with Congress, and then they can have this larger set of things, you know, that you need a separate authorization for the use of military force if you are going to actually deploy. Now, we're talking about this in, go ahead.
No, go on. I was going to say, so some of the specific recommendations you would have for lawmakers would be what, right? Because you're saying that absent a legislative remedy, things continue as they are, and they're at the discretion of the commander-in-chief, whoever that may be.
Right. Now, fortunately, as I was bouncing this idea around and working on this piece, the lawyers said, well, no, there's still quite a few roadblocks to this, or at least speed bumps. And as I was talking to former senior leaders within the Department of Defense, the civilians tended to be a little bit more worried, but the retired flag officers were, no, there would be pretty mass resignations before this would happen, right? it was hard for them to imagine getting to a point where the military would get too deeply involved in this. And so that I think we can feel better about that. I do just want to point out, right, I've been saying this as, well, what if the, you know, in these, what if the president says Antifa is an insurrectionist or the Democratic Party? But we do want presidents to have this authority. I mean, imagine if there were an armed uprising. We say the Boogaloo Boys, you know, the hardcore white armed white supremacists really try and start an armed insurrection, right? Then we would want cyber command. Well, we would want the president to be able to use all of the levers of power at their command, including cyber command, if we were threatened with something like a future civil war.
That certainly is a very, very compelling answer. Because if you consider it, right, when the two police officers in Los Angeles were shot, folks, you know, initially thought like, well, these are the protesters who are shooting people. And now it turns out that it could have been a Boogaloo ultra right person who actually may have done the shooting. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's still under an investigation and, you know, an allegation. One last question, very, very briefly. How do we have to think about, what are some of the other fine lines, in your view, we've got to think of and identify and potentially address either through policy or otherwise, given that this space is moving as quickly as it's moving?
Right. It's such an important question, Vago, right? How much we are going to talk about our capabilities versus how much we need to keep them quiet, how much we're going to, same with our operations. I know this is something that you think very deeply on, about how much, you know, especially right now as the U.S. has gone from being relatively restrained or quite restrained with our military cyber operations, mostly unrestrained with our intelligence operations, to now being much more active in wanting to use our offensive cyber operations to disrupt, say, Russian election interference, which seems like a good idea. But if we are now starting to do that a bit more frequently and more active, certainly our adversaries are going to decide to, you know, are going to have a voice in what happens next. And so as we're thinking about that, I really just do encourage a lot of, the main question is, okay, and what happens next? Okay, and what happens next? Okay, and what happens next? You have a lot of mixing up of who's doing what to whom, and that makes these fine lines very, very difficult to distinguish.
Jay, thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on. A lot of thought-provoking stuff, and maybe we can have you back and do a deeper program with a couple of other folks on that, because I think it's really worth plumbing out, because it is such a nuanced question, and we've been so concerned about the capability and not revealing anything at the same time that then, you know, like how does the entire organism need to think about how we educate the public on this when there is a revelation, as there will be, people aren't as alarmed and again, veer toward the tinfoil hat side of the equation, as opposed to saying, look, I mean, there are a lot of legitimate complexities to this. And everybody, the professionals like you and others who are associated with it, are trying to behave as lawfully and as you know, professionally as they can. So thanks so very much for joining us.
Thank you, Vago.
Thanks for joining us this week. Please be sure to go to our website and check out past Cyber Report episodes, as well as our daily and weekly podcasts. Follow us on social media and sign up for our weekly newsletter to ensure you never miss the latest Defense and Aerospace Report commentary and analysis. And finally, a very special thanks to Northrop Grumman for their cyber sponsorship. Visit northropgrumman.com/cyber to learn more. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.